Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Wildlife For You podcast. I am your host, Daryl Radijek, and if my camera is wiggling, it's because I just bumped my desk with with my knee. But we're going to do another podcast today, and I'm joined here by my friend, Meg Pelly, who is joining us from Tennessee. Say hi, Meg.
Hi, Meg.
Good deal. We'll do better introductions once we get rolling along here. But just so everyone knows, this is a Wildlife For You podcast. Pretty much what Wildlife For You is it's an educational program that's meant to teach people not just about wildlife, but about the outdoors in general. And we started up, we've got a ton of episodes. We got over 80 episodes from last year, and we talk a great deal about different wildlife species. But we just started up brand new with Meg Pelly joining us from East Tennessee, just outside of Great Smoky Mountain National Park. And that's her stomping ground. It's my old stomping ground. So we like talking quite a bit about the park. And then what we'll do is we'll talk about a few other things that may pertain to things that are not specific to the park, but will just be interesting to people in general. And so the first couple of episodes we did kind of had a focus on wildlife, in particular bears. That's my specialty. And so we're trying to think of what we're going to talk about today. And I told Meg, let's talk about what many, many people enjoy doing, not just inside Great Smoky Mountain National Park, but pretty much all across North America, pretty much all across the world, as a matter of fact. And that's just getting outside and going hiking. And so I figured my co-host here, Meg, is the greatest person to interview because she's a hikeaholic. And how many miles are you up to just within Great Smoky Mountain National Park alone?
I am probably, you know, I'm ashamed to say that I quit counting after about 500, but that was probably 2 years ago. So I'm probably close to 1,000.
And what is, if someone were to hike every single trail within Great Smoky Mountain National Park, what is the total mileage?
Well, it used to be 900 miles, and I believe they've kind of revamped some of the trails, so there's not quite as much mileage. It's over 800. But if you hike all the trails in the park officially and keep up with your stats and turn it in, there's what they call the 900 club. All the people who have hiked all the trails in the park. But to be honest, Daryl, to hike all the trails in the park, you're going to hike way over that much mileage.
Because you've got to hike trails repeatedly just to access other trails.
Yes, exactly. So it becomes a strategy of just trying to plot everything out, the logistics of how to hike these trails. And there's been books written and people follow the books about, you know, how to do the trail and in what order they do them in. I'm not officially working on hiking all the trails, but I hike with partners who are. So I am.
I know of one trail that you've done at least 25 times.
Yes.
Which trail is that?
That would be the Allen Cave Trail. Or actually,
all the way up to the top?
All the way up to Mount LeConte. Now, I've been up to Mount LeConte 25 times, but I have hiked the other four trails up to the park, too. But Allen Cave is the one I've hiked probably the most because it's the shortest. I can get out there the quickest on that trail.
I have been all the way to the top of LeConte via Allen Cave. And so I imagine my total mileage hiking on trails inside the park is probably about 50 miles. And the only reason I say that, I probably hiked hundreds of miles within the park, but I usually don't stay on trails.
Yeah. Well,
a lot of times with the work I used to do, you used to have to go off trail to find bear dens and different things like that. So anyway, so what I want to do today, there's a ton of people that enjoy the park. They come from all over the country to visit East Tennessee, Western North Carolina, primarily because of Great Smoky Mountain National Park. Sadly, well, I shouldn't say sadly. I think it's actually a good thing. Many of them stay in the more touristy areas like Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge. So you can still get away from people inside the park, even though there are some really crowded areas. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the best ways to get away from people, if you do vacation in that area, is to actually get on the trails and get off the beaten path. Get away from your car, because I think there are studies done that showed the vast majority of folks never venture more than like 300 feet from their car. So anyway, I imagine you can find some solitude in the park still. Is that correct?
That is correct. You know,
Okay.
there's a handful of trails that are extremely popular. One of the things that I do is help people plan day hikes in the park. And usually the people that I encounter and am helping are not familiar with the park at all. And
Right.
you know, so when I gauge their hiking abilities, that will kind of limit me to recommending certain trails. And these are usually trails that are the most visited in the park. But now the people who are serious hikers and have studied out the trail maps, there are plenty of places in the park where you could go, or we could send you, I could send you, that you might not see another person on that trail. So still lots of remote areas, definitely.
And before we get too far into it, I think we should mention a big change this year for anyone that is hiking within the park, especially if they plan to drive to a trailhead and plan on parking their vehicle there. And that
That
is.
is, you now have to have a parking pass to park anywhere in the park for more than 15 minutes.
Okay.
And you can get these passes, Daryl, at the Sugarland Visitor Center or the Oconalefti Visitor Center, I believe the Clingman.
You could order them online too, can't you?
You can order them online, but in the beginning, I think there was a delay in the time you ordered them and the time you got them.
I get
So they've all, but they have made it really simple to get these parking passes. Like I said, you can get them at the visitor center, but there are kiosks located all throughout the park now, and they will take a like your debit card, and you can just walk up and get one, and you know, for the day, the week. Now, if you want to buy a year long pass, you do have to go to the visitor center
Right.
or do it online, but.
And it's totally understandable with this being the very first year of that parking pass project. There was going to be some bumps to work out. And I'm sure they're still going to encounter them, but they're with 14 million visitors now vying to get some parking passes. I think they've done a pretty good job. The fact that they're still surviving and issuing parking passes. Hopefully, it will get easier and easier from here on
It
out.
is.
So,
Yeah, it is getting easier. Yeah, it's a good.
okay. Before I dive into some of the questions about, and we'll primarily talk about day hiking, where you pretty much just plan a day, get up bright and early, even sometimes before the sun rises, to do a hike that you're going to begin and end all on the same day. But before we do that, there are lots of opportunities. If people wanted to do extended hikes, like multiple days, can they not do that in the park? Like, are there
Oh,
backcountry
yeah.
sites for them to
There
reserve?
are lots of backcountry shelters in the park. The thing that maybe some people don't realize is you need to register with the backcountry office when you come into the park to do backcountry camping. And if you contact the backcountry office or even stop by the backcountry office, they have staff there that can plan, help you plan out the best route and where you want to go, and make sure that you have reservations for the shelters, because you do have to have
Yeah.
reservations for the shelters within the park. So, but yeah.
And that's definitely for the more hardcore hikers, because they're carrying not only equipment or gear for the day, but they also got to carry sometimes a tent to sleep, extra clothes, blankets, all that other stuff. So that is definitely not for the common average folks. I'd love that stuff, but I know most people are pretty much just looking forward to that day hike where they can be out and back and still enjoy the luxuries of sleeping in their own bed. So, all right, since you are probably the queen of day hiking, at least one of the queens I know, help me out here. Say someone comes up to you and say they're not very experienced with this. They want to go on a hike, maybe a couple miles. They've been practicing at home, trying to increase the distance, and they could go a couple of miles. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we always encourage people to be prepared, just like the Boy Scouts, be prepared and to carry along some items that you want to take on your day hike. So, Miss Pelly, what would you recommend the average hiker, if they're going on, say, a hike that's going to last 6-8 hours, what do they need to carry with them?
Well, Daryl, there's you're probably aware, and probably a lot of our listeners are aware, there's a list that we call the 10 essentials that every hiker, whether it be day hiker or backcountry hiking, should carry in their backpack. Now, if you Google the 10 essentials to carry on a hike, you'll get various things.
30 different things.
Yeah. So what I thought I'd do is kind of share with you what I carry in my backpack. What I recommend to people who are coming in to hike or are planning a hike, and maybe they're not real familiar with hiking. And I do encounter people like that a lot who, you know, they really don't have a clue, what do I put in my backpack? So, you know, this would be a helpful thing to kind of share. So I went through, I have 5 backpacks. And I carry various ones depending on the difficulty and length of my hike. But so I went through today and I kind of had to find all my 10 essentials and boom, all back together. So that's kind of what I've done. And
let's start with what you think are some of the most important essentials.
Well, one of the most important essential things would be a map or a compass or some kind of guidance GPS system. Now, I always, without fail, I have a paper map in my backpack every time. And when I'm hiking in the park, I'm doing the day hikes. Now, some of my day hikes are long, but I'm always doing a day hike. And this is the trail map of the park. And I rarely go off trail on my day hikes. But there have been times that the trail kind of does a wonky thing, and you may have it may come to a division in the trail and it's not marked, and you know, maybe an animal path has been made and it's kind of hard to tell where am I supposed to turn here. There's one particular trail over on the North Carolina side that kind of has some switchbacks in it. You kind of lose the switchbacks at one place, and it's really easy to not make that switchback and to keep going straight. And that actually happened to some friends of mine. And so they had to whip out the map, and they use a system called Gaia, which I don't know if you're familiar with that, but you download it. You can download the maps and work them offline. And that's a very important thing also, because there's no cell service in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. So if you haven't downloaded these things onto your phone before you get into the park, then you're not going to get them when you're in there.
Now, I will tell you, I'm going to interrupt real quick. One of the greatest things is your iPhone, because you could have maps, you could have everything, but there's a really big problem with these, and you just saw what it was. Well, my screen just went to sleep. But if you lose power to your iPhone, if you have your maps, all your emergency stuff on your phone, and the battery dies, you lose it all. So I love the idea of having a paper map with you to at least let you know which way you got to go.
And I would say, if you're going to go off trail, you also need a compass and you need to know how to use it. but for me, I always have my paper map. I have the trail marked out where I'm going to be going. And so, and usually I have plan B too. So that's one of the most important things. And I'll kind of throw in with that is you also need to be sure you let someone else who's not hiking with you know where you're going. And, you know, some of the people that I encounter are visiting the park. Maybe they're in the park for a vacation and they're all hiking. So they're not thinking, oh, we need to notify mom that's, you know, 5 states away and didn't come with us that we're getting on a trail to hike. But I always tell them that's a good idea, because if something happens to you on that trail, there's no cell service. If nobody knows you're on the trail and nobody's expecting a call that you're off the trail, you may be sitting there quite a while before someone happens upon you or you're able to get someone to run back out into cell service, which would be hours probably.
Believe it or not, we were taught that like all through hunter education and any outdoor activity you do, that's one of the key things is always tell someone where you're going, because you need to know if you don't come back, you need to know where people need to start looking. Yeah. And one of the things I started doing, obviously for decades, I would tell either my mom or my wife or whoever, like whereabouts I'd be going. One of the things I started doing now, and it's easier to do out west because we have more open territory, more high peaks. Whenever I get to some faraway destination, if I have cell service because you're on top of a high peak, I will just take a pinpoint and text it back to my wife just so she knows the last point I was known to be at. And so I try to do that, especially if I'm going to be gone a couple of days, just so someone knows the last location that I was at if something, heaven forbid, bad
right.
happened.
And they also make GPS. I know the ladies that I hike with, they have a GPS system, and there's a lot of
the Garmin inReach.
The Garmin inReach, and they can, like, their spouses or whoever can track them on their phone. And so that's kind of a neat feature. I don't personally have that because I'm always hiking with somebody who does.
Well, it's funny, when I first started hiking in the Smokies and I was doing a lot of the bear work, this was when a lot of the GPS technologies were first coming online. So mid-90s. And that was back when you had a Garmin system. You had to triangulate. It had to be able to see multiple satellites in the sky. And when you're in the Smokies in a deep ravine, you cannot get that lock on your position. So technologies are improving. Yep. But anyway, it's always good to try to let people know approximately where you're going to be.
Something that I started doing years ago, because like you said, a lot of these hikes, you get up way before daylight and you leave the house before anybody else is stirring. I would take a picture of myself so that they could see what I was wearing, so that if I disappear, they could at least describe, this is, show my picture, this is who you're looking for, and this is what she's wearing. You know, at least the base layer looks like
that would be, like I said, heaven forbid, but that would be the perfect piece of information for search and rescue.
Right.
So
the other thing that I always take is either a headlamp, and there's a headlamp like that with the extra batteries. And I usually have a backup source of light. This is my flashlight, and this is my tape. Can you see the taser on the end of that?
Oh, yeah.
We talked about that before. And bears don't like that noise. So I only just really use it for a flashlight. But, you know, and then backup batteries. You know, a lot of people will forget the batteries, and then you get out there, especially if your battery's been sitting for a while or they've drained, you get out there and then they don't work. So that's nice.
Yeah.
You know, and I have people tell me all the time, well, I'm not going to take a headlamp because I'm not hiking in the dark. And I go, you know what? Most of the time when I hike in the dark, I didn't plan to hike in the dark either. You just always want that with you. Again, I'm always telling people, the things that should be in your backpack should prepare you for the worst scenario, not the best. And so, you know, if you twist your ankle and you can't get out and you're stuck on the trail for hours and it gets dark, you're going to need a flashlight or a headlamp.
You just reminded me of something. When you said, whenever you end up hiking in the dark, it's not because you planned on hiking in the dark, it's because you found yourself. Did you happen to read my book, Shameless Plug?
Yes,
Spooning in there. There's a story in there about me with like a cousin-in-law type of thing that I had to hike to one of the backcountry sites to see if a bear was still visiting. And I had my paper map with me. I looked at it, and then I put it back in the pack, and I just didn't even refer back to it. But you said sometimes trails do wonky things, and I took the wrong trail, and lo and behold, I found myself back in the parking lot, like just as it was getting dark, and I still had to go to that campsite. So yeah, having a flashlight or a headlamp is a must, because sometimes things happen, and I was back in the parking lot still wanting to go camping, but some people could end up on top of a mountain wanting to be in the parking lot and it's dark.
Yeah. And usually when if I'm coming out late, it's because I could not hike as fast as I thought I could. But I've started in the dark, which is way better because, you know, it's starting to get light. I actually don't mind hiking in the dark. I kind of enjoy that. But I would not want to be caught in the dark without the flashlight. So other thing that is on the 10 essential list is usually like some kind of sunscreen or something like that. Now, I don't worry about that too much in the Smoky Mountains because, you know, the canopy, the forest canopy is so thick usually. Now, since the fires came through, there are some trails that the trees are gone. So the trails are now wide open, exposed, and you're on ridgeline without shade. And that can get you in trouble or sunburnt pretty quick. And I actually, it's probably been a couple of months ago, the last big hike I did was over on the North Carolina side on Lakeshore Trail. It was a 20 and a half mile day. And it was early spring, so the tree canopies had not filled out. The trees really hadn't even budded out yet. We really didn't take that into consideration when we started that hike. And it was a warmer day than it had been. It was getting up close to 80s. So as we're progressing, we're really drinking the water because it's getting warm. And we hit the highest peak or the highest elevation gain on that trail right at noon that day. And I thought, man, we timed all of this not well. And I learned a lesson on that one. And I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but I'll tell you about it. I always packed my backpack the night before and I fill my water up. I even fill my water bladder up the night before, because that way, if it's going to leak, I'm going to know it's going to leak and I can fix that before I leave. So on this particular hike, because it was so long, I had 2.5 liters in my water bladder, which we'll talk about that later. But I also had extra water, a couple of liters extra, and I had made those water bottles to stick in the side pockets. And I had made them in the morning, and I was leaving the house at like 3:30 in the morning, and left the house, got over there, had to catch a car shuttle to a boat shuttle across the lake in the dark on the North Carolina side, got on the trail, hiked in about 3 miles and went to reach for my water bottle. And guess where it was? Not in my backpack. Sitting on my counter at home. And I never missed it until I got, you know, a mile and a half, 2 miles in. So I knew, okay, I had a 20 mile hike and I have 2.5 liters of water and it's getting warm and there's no shade. So I was trying to really monitor the amount of water intake that I was taking. And it was with a group. We were hiking as a group. I got to about mile 7 and I thought, I'm done. And, you know, and I usually am not dragging. The people I was hiking with, they were going, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, And so finally about 5 more miles after that, one of the guys that was hiking with us, one of the other ladies said, my water is lower than it should be. And I'm like, mine too. And so he had brought a water filtration system, which I'll mention again in a moment. But that saved the day because we were able to filter out enough water as we were kept moving and add electrolytes to it and push on through. And then about mile 12, we got our second wind and we were able to we walked out of that trail right at dusk. Yeah, the moon was coming up. So, you know, I thought to myself, that could have been a bad situation.
You would have been in trouble had you run out of water.
You know.
Key ingredient there.
So anyway, back to the sunscreen thing. The whole lack of tree canopy made me think about that. So I rarely have sunscreen with me or rarely put it on in the Smokies. I do have like chapstick. Where's that gigantic thing of chapstick? Because that's what will get sunburn. And then the opposite problem is what I prepare for in the Smokies. And that is I always have a rain coat. I don't hike in a raincoat. I always use a rain poncho because of the airflow. And sometimes I only use the rain poncho only if it's really raining hard. A lot, 75% of the time, I hike with an umbrella. And people go, really? But it keeps my pack dry. It keeps the top of me dry. And if it's, if it's not pouring the rain, if it's pouring the rain, I'll pull the poncho out. But I don't do those frog tog things. You might be able to do that out west, but in the humidity and the Smokies.
Well, I was just gonna say the list you're preparing now is a great list for in the Smokies, somewhere in the east. In the west, it could be vastly different, because sunscreen is like an absolute must. You can burn yourself really bad in the west. The cool thing is, in the west, if you run into a freak rainstorm, as soon as it stops raining, within 20 minutes you're dry. So.
And that is true in the Smokies because so many people will come into the park or go into the park and to hike and looking at the weather and it's no chance of rain, and then they get poured on. And as you know, having lived here, the weather in the Smokies has a mind of its own, especially in the summer. You'll get these pop-up storms even at the higher elevation, and it'll just be a downpour. So that's one thing I always have in my backpack, whether it's calm for rain or not. I've always got a raincoat in my backpack. So, and I usually will carry some kind of dry bag to keep, like if it's going to start pouring the rain and stuff like that, I'll stick my phone, things that I don't want to get wet in that. And I learned that lesson the hard way. The first water crossing I ever did in the park was chest deep. And if you know anything about me and hiking, I absolutely hate water crossings. I mean, if it's over my ankle, I'm going, is there not another way around this? But I do them. You have to. There's so many water crossings in the park with all the trails. But the very first one I did, we came out at the Y, in the Townsend area. So you're probably familiar with that. Well,
Oh,
yeah.
yeah,
Well,
it's
we
deep
came
there.
out the wrong spot and we just had to cross it. And it was chest deep. When I got out, and of course my backpack was floating and I, was keeping it on me, but when I got out of the water, everything in my backpack was ruined. The first aid kits, everything was ruined. Somebody I was hiking with had his extra Ziploc bag and he gave it to me, and I had put my phone in it, and I had put my phone in the very top pocket of my backpack, and the water came halfway up my backpack. So, my first aid kit was in the bottom. I was like, so I had to replace all of that. But I learned after that, put stuff in a dry bag. And I do that if I've got a water crossing, because if you fall in, you don't want to lose all that again. So that kind of goes with the sun. I kind of group that in with the sunscreen stuff. Another thing, probably one of the most important things besides water, which we're going to get to, is the first aid kit. I have some that are pre-made. Like this one is pre-made, and it's the Mountain Series Hiker First Aid Kit. It's got Band-Aids and Neosporin and those kinds of things in it. I take this on most trips. If I'm hiking 5 miles or more, I'll take that kind of. It's not a great one. It's probably not going to save your life if it's dangerous, but it's going to help fix cuts and scrapes. And
Have you had need
yes,
for it?
I have. Not that
Okay.
one, the other one. The other one I'm going to talk about, I have. I'll tell you about that in a second. If I'm doing a pretty long distance hike or one that I know is going to be physically hard, I take a little bit bigger backpack, which has more stuff in it. And in this stuff, I carry things like a knee brace, an arm brace, or I could, if I had to, I could sew you up. But a little bit heavier duty stuff in that one. If I'm just going 5 miles or less, I just throw Band-Aids in a Ziploc bag and with some tape and, alcohol stuff. And I don't take that great big heavy backpack. Also, one of the advantages I have is I hike with the same group of people almost all hikes. We've hiked together so much, we know what's in each other's backpack. And so instead of all of us bringing this huge medical kit, we
Share the
share it.
wealth.
And so somebody's got that and somebody else has the lighters, and so that helps too. When you know the people you're hiking with really well, then you can kind of prepare together. You asked if I'd ever had to use that, and not in a dire emergency, but I was hiking up Alum with a friend one March, and it was icy. It had snowed 2 days before. It was still icy. And she hiked with two poles, and she was going up a step, and she slipped and fell, and she couldn't catch herself quick enough because she had poles. And she hit her knee on the edge of the step, and blood just started squirting through her pants leg. And I thought, ooh, that's not good. And so, you know, we looked at it. It was a pretty deep cut. We cleaned it up as best we could, and we were headed up to the top of Mountain Climb. We had reservations for the night, or we would have turned around and just gone back down. She said, no. And I gave her, you know, Tylenol, and I said, you want to go up? She said, yeah, let's go on up. So we went on up to the top, and I had bandaged it up. And when we got to the top, I noticed that it was starting to bleed pretty heavily again. And so I said, you may want to get the staff to look at that. Unfortunately, the staff person we got was not well trained in first aid, or even, I guess, maybe wildlife first aid, backcountry first aid. But they did have this.
Even I'm training. Yeah, that.
Well, and
I had to take those classes when I was right. working for the
Forest Service. I think all the staff up there is. I think perhaps we just got maybe a new person. But I was able. I have military school experience, and we had to do this every single year. And I always joke and say, you know, I could, if your arm gets blown off, I'm your lady to come to. But so I worked on her leg, and we got it. We butterflied it together, and we got it to stop bleeding. And we hiked back down the next day down a different route. A couple of days later, she called me. She said, hey, I went to the doctor because my leg was still really hurting. Turns out she had shattered the tibia in her. Yeah. Ooh. She spent like a long time in a boot and a lot of physical therapy. But, you know, I told her, you're going to need stitches, but we're not going to be able to get you to the hospital in time for stitches, because once 24 hours goes by, stitches won't do you any good. So we were working. All we had to work with were the butterfly closures, but that's what we had in our first aid kit. That's also what they had up at Mount LeConte. So she had a scar, but, you know, we didn't know it was as bad as it was. Unfortunately, it turned out good. She's all good. But, you know, had we not had that stuff in our backpack, and had we not had a little bit of knowledge, and I always tell people, it never hurts to take a first aid course. You know, if you're going to be really serious about hiking, maybe learn a little bit about how to handle some of those things that might happen. Had another friend hiking, yeah. And the lady she was hiking with slipped in the creek and fell and broke her collarbone. They were 7 miles from the end of the trail.
A painful
walk. So my friend took some of the bandages she had in her backpack, and she made her a sling and tied it into her chest, and they were able to walk her out the 7 miles. So, you know, things happen. Okay.
All right. So what else you got besides the first aid kit?
So the other thing is going to be, well, and one other thing I have in my first aid kit that I mentioned is like a pocket knife. That's, you know, you can always use that. Yeah. So I usually stick that in my first aid kit. Now, the other thing you're going to need, those things are kind of to help prevent emergencies. The other things are going to be kind of like you're in an emergency and you're going to need this. So one of them is going to be your fire starter kit. And I carry these. These are the all weatherproof matches. They work in the wind and they work in the rain. And, you know, they're not very big. I carry that. I actually have a couple of them. You see one in here. But here's what I put in my bag for fire starter. And it works great. You know what that is?
It's not on the camera. Move it up. Oh, lint
from
your
lint
dryer.
From my dryer. Yeah. Yep. Lint from my dryer. Yep. And I stuff it. Can you see that? In toilet paper. It's a toilet paper. That can stuff.
Very good idea.
So I just carry all of that in a bag. That's the fire starter kit. And I also always have backup way of starting a fire.
I always carry a lighter. I got the waterproof matches as well, but it's always good to have a backup plan. And the thing is, with a fire, you hope you never need it, because that pretty much means you're staying overnight somewhere. And the fire, not only, especially if you hike alone, I know not many people do, but some people hike alone. And if you got to stay overnight somewhere alone in the wilderness somewhere, the fire, besides providing warmth, is a friend. It gives you light when you don't, it takes your mind off things. Instead of sitting there in the dark listening to every branch break, that fire definitely becomes a comfort to you.
Yeah, that's true. I've never had to have a fire because I was stuck in the woods overnight. Thank goodness. We have just had fires, just boiling water or cooking something. Just, let's face it, making coffee is what we were doing. Because we all know that I'm
a hot The truth comes out, Meg.
But it was funny one time. We all thought we had matches or a lighter. And so we're digging through our backpacks. And fortunately, some of us didn't. But fortunately, I did. But I thought I had two. I could only find one. So, things I check before I leave now. Okay, moving on. One of the other things, most important things, would be shelter. Now, we're not talking about a tent, because like you said, we're talking about day hikers that are not going to pack all that stuff. So this is one of the things I take, or it is what I take, and it's a bivy. And basically, it's like a scaled down bag that you would get in that would provide you protection from the elements if you had to spend the night there. And I'm not going to pull it out, because it's all rolled up inside this little bag. And if I pull it out, we ain't never getting it back. So.
A similar thing to that, and they sell them fairly cheap. They have those like emergency safety blankets, which are not like a blanket. It's almost like a sheet of tinfoil. super lightweight, but in a pinch, if you need to cover up with something and provide that layer between you and the elements, those things definitely help. And they're pretty cheap and pretty lightweight. And so it's a good backup system.
I have a couple of those too. And I got this because you can actually get down in it. So I kind of like that feature. So I got, and it's very, very light. Doesn't take up much space. So that's the other thing. Okay. We've talked about the fire. We talked about the shelter. So kind of talking about things that you would take anyway in your backpack would be food and water. You're obviously going to take that. And
wait, which one's more important, food or water? Very good.
Water by far. I always tell people, because the trails in the park are usually rated as easy, moderate, strenuous. So if I am sharing trail information with someone and it's a moderate hike, I tell them, be sure and take plenty to drink and snacks, and then take, when you think you have enough, add a little more, because most people will way undertake the amount of food and water that they need. And so I always have a talk with people about, you're not preparing just for this hike, you're preparing as if you would have to spend the night on that trail. And they all kind of look at me like, I don't like that. And I'm like, you're preparing for the worst scenario, not the best scenario.
Well, just thinking about, because recently, even this year already, we've had some lost hikers. It happens every single year. And a lot of them, it's not necessarily backcountry hikers. I think there was a gentleman, I think it was last year, he was just going fishing up a little drainage and just was planning on going for a couple hours and ended up spending overnight. And I think they found him late the next day, because you can get turned around in there, and before you know it, you're walking in the complete opposite direction of what you're supposed to be doing. So it is always good to have the gear in case of that wrong turn or the emergency that pops up.
Right. We've had a couple of this season already in the Great Smoky Mountains be lost. So that's true. So extra food, extra water. I normally take 2.5 liters with me to drink. If I'm going 5 miles or more, I've got at least 2.5 liters. Now, if I'm going a lot more than 5 miles, I will add water in, just like I told you earlier. And sometimes I forget it.
I will tell you a little trick that I started doing. I love it. Is you mentioned about filling up the bladder. A lot of packs nowadays have this water bladder in it, or a camelback. Some people call it a camelback, but it has a tube that runs out of the backpack, and then you could drink without removing your pack. Very good. I don't know what kind of mouth that one has. I love putting. Loading it with ice and putting a little bit of water, because there's nothing more refreshing than being 6 hours or 10 miles into a hike, and you drink the water and it is ice cold. It is awesome. I love
So
having
here's the
the ice
problem I
water.
have with that, because I've tried that. In the Smokies, it melts, it's so humid and that melts so quickly that
Oh,
your
really?
whole backside becomes soaking wet because your bladder is sweating because as the ice in it is
Okay.
melting.
That would be refreshing to me.
Well, I guess some people it is. I usually will stay, I won't freeze it. I'll put it in the refrigerator the night or the night before, or like I said, a lot of times I just go ahead and put it in my backpack. But I just get used to drinking warm stuff, I reckon. But I rarely take just water. I normally will take like a body armor or something and fill my bladder up with that. Or I definitely will add electrolytes to my water.
They sell those little packets that you can add to water that gives you those extra nutrients that you
Yeah, and
might be
that's
lacking.
that big I always have that. I never just take plain water. Now, another thing we talked about, I was talking about earlier how when we ran out of water, one of the guys that was hiking with us had brought a way to filter water. And that's very important in the Smokies. They advise you not to drink out of the streams in the Smokies. If I were in dire straits, of course I would. But if I can keep from it, I'm going to. So this is another thing that I take with me, and it's a has a filter built into the cap, and it's soft sided, so I can put water in there and filter it through the cap and drink it that way if I needed to. Now, my friend who filtered the water for us, you can see the water filter in there. My friend who filtered the water, he had one of these, and he just would fill it up and filter, and he'd squeeze it into our water bottle for us. So he was having to filter, two or three times to get enough water for all of us in there.
Does it filter fairly quickly? Because I remember when they first came out, like decades ago, sometimes the filter was so fine that it took hours to filter
No.
through.
This one works really,
But
most of the time when I'm using it, I will fill it up in a stream and then I'll just swirl it and shake it around and then I drink it. And it comes through that. So, it's
nice.
not the best tasting stuff, but it works. And then, so we talked about extra food, extra water. One of the things, food is a big, that varies a lot from people to people. I've hiked with people who take leftover pizza in their backpack to eat, and then I've hiked with people who will, everything they take to eat is rabbit food. And I'm somewhere in the middle, still.
I think the go-to thing is usually like the trail mix, where you have some peanuts, some M&Ms or something, so granola or
So,
whatever.
because I'm doing longer hikes, most of my hikes are between 15 and 20 miles, and we're trying to dial in on the best food to take to keep our calories going, to keep our energy going. And one of the things that we have found that helps us, and we kind of laugh about it because we eat the whole time we're hiking. A lot of people will hike and they stop and eat lunch. But we have found if we certain foods, we chop up into little pieces and prepare them, and we stuff them in different places on our backpack that we can get to them without having to stop and take our whole backpack off.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. You mentioned about you hike typically about 20 miles, and just so everyone knows, that is a long day. That is a big hike. On average, if you're talking about someone just going out and walking around the block, the general average is about 3 miles an hour. Faster hikers can do more, sometimes slower, especially if you're going uphill, you might be less than that. But so like a 20 mile hike, that's 7 hours of straight walking. That's not even stopping anywhere. So you're talking an all day hike when you're doing 20 miles or more.
Yeah. Most of my hikes are all day.
Yeah.
And as I said before, I'm hiking with people who are working on hiking all the trails in the park. So sometimes the logistics make for a 20 mile day or more. 20 and a half miles is the most I have done, though, in one day. And as I said, we were pushing it that day.
I'm just doing a sidebar because Wildlife For You, one of the things we do is we do these week-long excursions in really cool places. And this year we're going to Utah. Meg, you'll be joining us there. I'm not doing any 20-mile hikes. We're doing some hikes. But we're probably going to keep it to about 5 miles or less. The good thing, any of the more difficult ones, I've got some great help that are like mountain people that can keep up with they can keep up with you, in other words, Meg.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that trip. And I'm fine if it's not a 20 day. That is a long day for me.
Yeah, it's okay. Now there are people out there, we're talking about hiking. There are people out there that live to hike and to get from point A to B. I'm more of a destination kind of, like some people hike fast just to be done with it. I just go for the journey, like to stop and take pictures. I use that excuse whenever I'm out of breath, but I just love seeing different wildflowers, different vistas, just enjoying the journey is all about hiking.
And, you know, I had this discussion with someone recently, and for the most part, that's how I like to hike too. But I also appreciate the longer hikes because it pushes me to be better. I enjoy hiking with this group of friends because they are working on their map and they are pushing to get this done quick in the quickest way possible. So sometimes these miles are long and they are hard, but you know, that's not every hike. And so I enjoy those because it forces me to get up off the couch and go do something. Even though a lot of my hikes, I said most of my hikes between 15 and 20 miles, that's the ones I've done in the last year, I guess. But now I'm in the park every week and I'm walking much smaller distances with my job in the park. What I do in the park requires me to be outside quite a bit, and I'm working on in trails and walking smaller distances. And I really enjoy that part of it too. You know, that's what restores your mind and your brain. You I always tell people, hike your hike. Don't worry what I do. And if today you want to do 20 miles, go for it. But if you only want to do 3 miles, that could be the best hike ever too. So it's about the journey, as you said.
Absolutely.
One other thing I want to mention, Daryl, that we haven't talked about yet is clothing, extra clothing. And you know how humid it gets in the Smokies, especially during the midsummer. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times in the summer, I will hike in shorts or, loose pants to not be so hot, tank tops. But I will always have a sweatshirt or a jacket with me, even on the days it's going to be 90 degrees. And I'm sure you understand why is the worry of hypothermia, and which can affect you even on warm days. And I have hiked up to Mount LeConte, as we said, 25 times, and I've hiked up there in all kinds of temperature variances. And usually the top of Mount LeConte is 20 degrees cooler than it is down in the valley. So you have worked in the middle of July to get all the way to the top of the mountain, and you have poured the sweat, and then you get up there and you get still, and it's 20 degrees cooler, you know. So even
20 degrees. That evaporative cooling, besides the temperature difference, if there's wind blowing, you can get hypothermia in 55 degree weather because you're wet, the wind is blowing, and it's just not a good situation.
So I always advise people, take a jacket with you. Even if you think it's too warm, you can take a very light jacket. Take some kind of extra layer to put on over you, and even in the summer. Now, obviously in the winter, my backpacks are bigger in the winter because of the layers that I'm packing, layers of clothing that I'm taking with me. So,
speaking on the clothing front, it's always good, and I'm not going to be able to recommend footwear, but it's always good to have a good hiking boot, whatever you are most comfortable in. But to have good ankle support, because obviously hiking anywhere in the mountains, doesn't matter if it's east or west, if you're going to be walking on uneven trails, rocks, boulders, it's super easy to twist an ankle and you'd be in a bad situation there. So make sure whatever hiking boots you prefer have good support, good sturdy traction, so you're not slipping on too many things. But that's really a preference. I know I have some hiking boots that I prefer. Some others aren't so comfortable, but it's too easy.
I always tell people, go to a reputable store that will sell the hiking boots.
And you'll pay more for good quality, but you'll appreciate that good quality if ever you're
Let somebody help. Let somebody who works at these stores who knows their hiking boots help you and get the right fit, because the right fit is so very important. And something that I have learned and I tell people is, in the summertime, I do not hike in waterproof shoes. I hike in shoes that will drain, because you're going to get them wet in the summer. There's so many creek crossings, especially in the park. And just the weather. Now in the wintertime, I do hike in waterproof shoes, because most of the time in the winter, I'm not going to be doing those bigger creek crosses during the winter time. So I'm doing rock hopping stuff that's, you know, I want to keep my feet dry. I'm not going to get over my ankles into the water if I can help it. but in the summertime, I'll just walk right through the creek. I don't try to rock hop it. I just walk through it, because I'm getting too old to rock hop. It's a little too dangerous for me, you know?
It doesn't that stink? I'm in the same boat as you. We're fairly similar in age, and I used to be able to balance and jump from rock to rock, but now, just like your eyesight goes at like 40 some years of age, your balance starts going, and it's like, oh my gosh, this used to be so easy.
I have two hiking sticks I hike with.
that's a good accessory to mention, because I carry, there are some collapsible or expandable hiking poles that I will carry in my backpack and fold them up when I don't need them. But then if you're in an area, especially a stream crossing, it is wonderful to have some type of hiking sticks or walking sticks to help you ford a stream of some sort.
Boots, you know, different people like different things in their sticks, as they do in their boots and shoes. But I have always hiked with at least one hiking stick, always. And so if you make me walk through the woods without a stick, I don't think I can do it. I'll just fall over. I don't know how to keep my balance in the woods without a stick. But I like them. Some people don't. Some people will not hike with them. They think they're cumbersome, but you know, they've saved me on many occasions.
So, is there anything else in your pack that you can think of, or?
I have various things. I have, so I take sometimes salt tablets or pickle juice. And they actually, you can actually buy just pickle juice, because that will help with.
The easiest thing is just buy the
Yeah, well,
pickles and eat the
if you're a
pickles
big
and
pickle eater, that would work. But that helps with cramping and.
that is along the lines of the electrolytes. Some of those nutrients that just plain old water doesn't
So,
provide.
some of the extra things I have are like that. In the wintertime, I have hot hands, or I have enough that I could probably heat my whole body with hot hands, down my mittens and boots and that kind of stuff.
No, that's a great idea. The one thing that you didn't mention, which I thought they were going to be side by side, because you mentioned sunscreen, very, very important out west. Not so important out west, but very important where you are. Do you ever carry bug spray?
And I forgot to mention that, but
Okay.
I don't carry bug spray.
No. Well, some people don't find the need, especially if you're on the trail. It might not be that bad. I do know going off trail of any sort, it was a must-have simply because ticks and chiggers and all those other fun eastern
I
bugs that
am
you got.
the worst thing that bothers me are the little gnats, the little no-see-ums, as we call them. And there are some trails, and there are usually lower elevation trails, that those things are,
A lot of times it's by water
the
too.
trail I'm thinking of is right by water, and they're so bad that some people will buy the nets that they put on their head and walk with them. I've tried different things to keep them away, and I've not really found anything. I usually just put my sunglasses on so they can't get in my eyes and just walk on. But I have never had a tick bite from hiking in the Smokies. I'm not going off trail, like you said.
If you're, yeah, well, if you're constantly moving, it's unlikely for them to get, it's more often associated when you go out in the woods and you sit somewhere for a while. That's when you're more likely to pick up ticks and chiggers. But yeah, if you're constantly moving, probably not as likely. But one thing that I think would warrant mentioning, a lot of people are allergic or have allergies to certain insects, bee stings. And so to carry, I even have an EpiPen in case there's like a really bad reaction to one. I carry that whenever I'm leading some of the students or other folks that I'm in charge of in case they do have a bad reaction. But Benadryl is always a good thing to carry, especially if you do react negatively to
Now I
insect
do have
bites.
that in my
So.
first aid kit.
Medical kit, yep.
That and poison ivy and poison oak are everywhere, and apparently I'm not allergic to it. I've never ever had it. And I've
You'll get it. I was never allergic to it until about 5 years before I left Tennessee, and then I started getting it, and I was getting it bad because you can develop an allergy, and you might not ever develop that allergy, but I thought I was in the clear, and then one day I got it, and it just got worse and worse. But yes, it is a monstrosity in the Smokies and many places in the East.
It's everywhere. I mean, recently a friend sent me a picture. One of the things that I do in the Smokies is monitor a certain trail, for the trail crew. So I will hike it and let them know if it's in bad shape or trees are down or anything like that, and do a report on it. Same trail every year. But another friend of mine was on a different trail, and we've had some pretty bad storms come through this spring. And so now that the weather is getting a little better and people are starting to get out and hike more, and she sent me a picture, and it was a monster tree across this trail, and it was just wrapped in poison ivy. And then the ground underneath it was covered in poison ivy. So there was no getting down and going under this tree, and it was way too big to go over. And she said, you have to climb about 60 feet up through poison ivy to get around it.
And most people will associate the leaves of three, leave it be, and they recognize poison ivy that way. But a lot of people I know, like, especially if you're new to the South, the poison ivy, the vines on it can be 5 inches and hairy. It's crazy.
Yeah, hairy is big and
that's what you say. Yes, exactly.
But yeah, we come home and take baths in bleach water to make sure we get all that off of us. Anyway, I think that's about all. No wonder my bag is so heavy.
No, it's a great list. And like you said, if you get on the internet and you Google what to carry in your pack, you're going to get a slightly different list in almost every website you go to. So I think the best thing to do is get out there and experience it and learn, because you might be on a hike and something you need and you don't have. So next time, you know to carry it. And so over time, you'll develop your go-to pack. And the more you hike, the more comfortable you'll be and the less likely you are. But you'll also be well better prepared in case anything does go wrong because of the experience you had going all those other times. So
yes.
All right. So, okay, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent here. You mentioned all the things that people should carry. And it's mostly safety things like the map, the phone, the medical kit, extra clothes. What do you carry, kind of like a personal meg item, like a thermos of coffee?
Well, you're real close.
For you.
How'd you know?
So is there anything that you carry that like not the average hiker carries?
I have this little stuffed animal thing on the back of my backpack. And her name is Maggie May. And it's made out of a sock. But it was given to me by my hiking partner. And she had them made. I hike with her and another lady. And we do a lot of hikes in the park together. They both are working on their maps, as I said. And she had these made for us. And we named them. And we hook them on the back of our backpack every time we go out in the woods. There is absolutely no reason for them. They just go along with it. Sometimes they show up in pictures. We used to, especially in the wintertime, her husband would hike with us a lot. And bless his heart, he was one that ended up carrying, you know, the big first aid kit, because we would be doing these longer hikes and he'd come along with us. And he would always bring Jet Boil and coffee. And so it's really neat to think, I have had some coffee on top of some really beautiful peaks in the Smoky Mountains. And so sometimes I'll carry that. There's a cabin in the Elkmont area that is kind of removed from the main Elkmont area. It's a couple of miles back up into the woods. It's one of the original cabins. And I'll hike back there sometimes and take my Jet Boil and just sit on the porch of that cabin. There's nobody around and drink my coffee.
It's that too is an amazing comfort. It's just a feel good thing. And like some people might even take like a little flask of their favorite drink just to get to where they're going and just sit back and relax and enjoy. But you mentioned the Jet Boil. This was an overnight trip. It actually is a multi-day trip. We were camping in Algonquin Provincial Park, and we had torrential rains for multiple days. And we ended up, it was myself and a couple of my friends, and we ended up aborting the trip. We just wanted to get out of the wilderness alive because of these torrential rains. And I remember canoeing across the lake, and the rain was... it was going horizontal, but I remember we were just so soaking wet, and we pulled off to the side, huddled up underneath a giant spruce tree, and he had his Jet Boil And we had, it was the best tasting ramen pride soup I've ever had in my whole life. Just because it was like things were so miserable that comfort gave us not just the energy, but renewed our spirits to continue on to get out and to get back into safety.
One of the
So.
best times I remember having coffee, it was in the middle of the winter, and we had hiked up Brushy Mountain Trail to the top of Mount LeConte, and we had gone out on kind of out on the edge a little bit, where there was a little bit of a clearing, and we were looking all down into the to the Greenbrier Valley area through there. One of the prettiest views in the park, in my opinion, and not too many people see it. And it had been snowing, and it was icy, patches of ice, and so we were very cold when we got still. And the first thing he did is whip out that jet boil and start heating up water. And they'd just bring instant coffee, but we knew each other well enough to know what kind we liked. And so he would make you a cup that was just your flavor. And we were sitting there sipping on that coffee, and it was, kind of wintry weather, but absolutely beautiful view. And we kind of stepped over behind some rhododendron bushes to just get a better view. And I looked down and I saw the biggest bear paw print I have ever seen. I put my foot beside it, and I wear a size 7.5 shoe, and it was huge next to my foot. And I have a picture of it somewhere, but all I could think was, that's a recent print because it's in the snow, And so I'm like, guys, we might want to wipe our coffee up, move on.
He
I
smelled
know.
the
It's
coffee
like,
brewing
stop
is what he
the
did.
move. But, good memories. And people ask me, what's your favorite trail in the park? And I have a lot. Alum Cave is one of my favorite hikes for the views, but it is also hard to get parking there. It is,
I was going to say
yeah,
that
it's
is one
becoming
of the
one of the
busiest
busiest
trails in
trails.
the
I tend
park.
to do it at times when it's times of the year when there's not as many people on it. And early in the morning, I will do that trail because not so many people. But one of my favorite trails is a pretty easy trail, and that's the Big Creek Trail on the North Carolina side. And I hike it out to Walnut Bottoms. Oh, you need
Never
to
done
come do
that one.
that one. It's a beautiful trail. It's got a little bit of elevation, but not bad. But it goes along Big Creek, which is an absolutely beautiful river. It's as you imagine all the rivers in the Great Smoky Mountains, with all the big boulders and the huge tulip trees. It's a beautiful area. And I'll hike about 5 miles out to Walnut Bottoms, which is a backcountry campsite. And there's a bridge there that I'll sit at over the river and eat my lunch, and then hike the 5 miles back. So that's one of those trails you can get on and not really have to think. That's a trail. You don't have to carry all of your stuff because you know that trail so well. And that's one of my favorite. But really, to me, what makes a trail memorable and enjoyable are the people that you are hiking with.
Oh, 100%.
And we like to say we solve world problems on our hikes through the park.
Well, I'll tell you two things. First off, my favorite trail, I
Oh,
always
yeah.
loved White Oak Sinks because back when I was there in the late 90s, it was lesser well known. It's becoming more well known now, but I used to do that hike and barely see another soul on it whenever I used to do it. That was 25 years ago. That was one of my favorites, but I agree with you wholeheartedly is memories are usually best made with other people or best at least best remembered with other people. So make sure you have good hiking partners because they make or break your day when you hit the trail.
As we know from reading your book.
So, yeah. Well, speaking of my book, actually what I was going to do, here's my book again. Maybe I'll hit the trail with you. It's just so you know, it's Spooning a Bear. Just go on Amazon and you could look it up, but it's got mostly bear stories. There is a couple hiking stories. But this is a shameless plug. I'm thinking of heading over to that area, Great Smoky Mountain National Park, mm-hmm. sometime in August to kind of go around to a couple of places to see if they'll be willing to put my book in their store. I might bring my son with me, but I might be hitting you up for a place to stay for a couple of days.
Excellent.
So anyway, anything else on hiking? Any last words that if someone came up to you and said, where's a, well, you already said where some of the good places to go, but any wise words about hiking in the park or anywhere else in East Tennessee just or Western North Carolina?
Don't step on the trail without knowing where that trail is going to lead you. you know, that we talked about that. The very first thing was having a map and knowing where that trail is going to lead you and where you're going and being sure you've let somebody else know where you're going. You know, if you're doing a short trail and everything goes well, you would never have to have most of the things that we've talked about today, because a lot of these things are for emergencies. You are going to have food and water, you know, especially in the Smokies. People don't realize that hiking in the Smokies is different than walking 5 miles around your block. You know, it's a little bit different. You know, my overall advice is to do a little research and be prepared before you step out into the woods on these hikes. And there's lots of resources to help you be prepared. So.
Yeah. And if you are a first timer just starting out, stick to the trail. Don't venture far off trail. That can come in time if you get more experience and feel more comfortable with it, but by all means, try sticking to the trail, because it's a whole lot easier to to find you if you do get lost if you're somewhere on a trail somewhere. All right. I think we covered quite a bit, Meg. I so enjoy talking to you. We can ramble on all day. Anyway, we're already well over an hour, so I think we ought to wrap this episode up. Again, if you love the outdoors, you love wildlife, you just love being in Mother Nature, by all means, do a day hike somewhere. It could be Great Smoky Mountain National Park, but it doesn't matter where you are in North America. Kind of plan ahead, make sure you're safe, enjoy your time out there, because it's a rare opportunity for you to be alone sometimes with nature and to get all your thoughts and your soul together. So with that, Meg, thank you once again for joining me, and we hope to do this in a few more weeks.
Something
we'll come
else.
Up with another topic for you. Okay. All right. I'll leave it up to you to figure out what our next topic is.
I will. If you.
All right. All right. Well, we'll see you, folks. Signing off from Wildlife
Bye.
For You.